If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. As you know, we're here every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. Today is Thursday. And, you know, today I just feel good today. A lot of stuff to talk about. I think that today, if you're listening, you will be so much more informed on the number of technical issues. And, you know, I understand the ones we're talking about today. Sometimes I have to fake it. But today, the agenda is full of good information. You're going to learn about the Leon County Commission meeting Tuesday. We're going to touch the highlights on a couple different issues. You're going to learn about the joint meeting between the city and the county on homelessness. If you read the headlines, $6.2 million being spent on homeless issues coming out of that meeting. Mayor John Daley called it a game changer. We've heard that before on other things, but it's a lot of money, $6.2 million, and a lot of stories have left out some, I think, some interesting numbers. And I've always had this problem of understanding exactly how many people were homeless. You know, we're a community of 300,000, the Big Bend area. If you include a few other counties, you know, you're approaching probably 500,000-600,000 in terms of population. So in our next segment, we'll talk about that, the money, where it's going, and also how many people are actually, we're talking about down and out homeless, individuals or families who are spending the night in a place that is not meant for human habitation. That's the definition. We'll give you those numbers. I think you'll be surprised at the numbers, but anyway, we'll deal with that. You know, back to the Leon County Commission meeting, you know, there was the item about renaming streets, and they did rename one street for some local civil rights activists, but they passed on the Obama Street naming. And if you just read the headlines, you think they did it. You might not know why they did it, but there is other reasons, which we'll get into on that issue. Also an interesting change in the meeting process for the county due to the pandemic. They're going to, as things that happen in when there's crisis, sometimes you come across good ideas. And a lot of people listen to me, they may be too young, but some there may be some older people that remember that the Ted Koppel show Nightline started because of the hostage crisis back in the late 70s. And then after the hostage crisis was over, a show went on for years. Well, same thing with this pandemic. We've got a couple things that they're going to keep in their meeting processes, and we'll go over those in the next segment. We'll give you a rehash of the FBI trial yesterday. You know, I'll try not to get too animated about this, but it was, you know, yesterday Gary Yordan was on the stand testifying, and Taos Reports has done a number of stories years ago about the corruption and the unethical behavior that was going on in the city. And I'll be darned if it wasn't basically just verified on the stand by Gary Yordan, who was who's a public relations expert and also a consultant, and also was an associate with Scott Maddox, who has pled guilty of bribery and pay-to-play charges in the federal court. But very interesting when you get someone under oath and they are forced to tell the truth, what you get. And a lot of people have been duped over the last 10 years. So we'll get into that and the specific issue with the McKibben Hotel, get you up to date on really what it means. You know, JT Burnett's on trial, but the witnesses that they're calling really puts the city of Tallahassee on trial, unfortunately, because you've had the former, I believe Lou Shelley's already testified, who was a city attorney. I think you've got on the list, you've got former city commissioners Nancy Miller and also Gil Ziffer, and then the city manager Rick Fand is supposed to testify. So they're going to reveal things that they may not have reached the bar as being criminal, but it's clearly they fooled people and they basically misled, told lies in the public about what was going on, and we're only in day two, and it what was revealed yesterday, again, was just that there's so much that has been covered up and lied about by so many people, and so anyway, we're gonna give you the details on that at the bottom of the hour, and then this investigation of Joe Burgess, the principal at Childs High School, I got a really good handle on this. So what we'll do is try to get you up to speed on it. A lot of different implications here. And that's what I want to focus on, is we'll give you the background of what sort of generated this this investigation. We've got the report, the 20-page report. We're going through it. We'll write a story when we can get all the information, and a concise story, hopefully sometime today or tomorrow. But there's a lot of implications here about how the school system is basically tracking money. And I think you'll be surprised that this report, you know, it did cast some criticism on Joe Burgess, the principal at Childs High School, but it also basically said that, you know, he didn't violate any law or any policies. And so that goes back up to what laws and policies are in place in the Leon County school system. And we're not talking about $30,000-$40,000 here. We're talking about millions, potentially, at all the different schools. But you're looking at what's going on at Childs High School, and you're saying, well, wait a minute, if this is going on here, what's going on at these other schools? Why aren't we investigating what these other principals are doing with what they called advanced placement funds? And I'll get into what that is. It's not as complicated as it sounds. But it is money that gets in the system, and it appears that there was not a lot of accountability. And some of the money ended up in the hands of the football coach out at Childs. We'll talk to you about how that happened and why that may be a concern. And again, when you look at one school and these things are taking place and they're not illegal or they're not wrong, they're not violating a policy, then does that mean that they're probably happening at other schools in the school district? So I think, again, a story that Talis Reports first broke and we talked about first here on Above the Fold on Real Talk 93.3, and, you know, this could be a dynamite story in the sense of promoting reform on how some of these things are followed up on. But when you're spending millions of dollars at a school and you don't have any processes in place to verify that the work is actually being done, you're just assuming it's being done. And then when you find out that they're not filling out time cards and you say, well, they're really not violating any policies, that's a concern. And so we'll dig into that. But when we get back, what we're going to do is focus on the Leon County Commission meeting that took place on Tuesday. We got the briefs posted on our website at Talis Reports. And then we'll dig into this homeless issue, $6.2 million, tell you who's getting the money, and we'll tell you what it's supposed to fix. So sit back, and you're getting ready to get informed about some very technical issues in a very easy way. So I'll be right back after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Jeez, just when I think I'm getting comfortable with everything.
You're getting up there, man. You're working on it.
All right, Above the Fold is brought to you by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home, but it doesn't always have to be a major project. Fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way, and I recommend starting with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Taos' premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior or exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you. Give them a call at 385-6649, 385-6649, and we appreciate their sponsorship. Okay, let's pivot to the Leon County Commission meeting. A couple issues I wanted to make you aware of. First, on the, with the pandemic ceasing to be a policy issue in terms of how government conducts business, the County Commission is moving to get back to the way they did things previously. And one of the issues they took up was obviously voting to do that, but part of the process was to get rid of the online comments people could submit during the pandemic. And so there was a move to continue to keep that in that process in place. And I think they're going to, they voted 7-0 to return to the pre-pandemic procedures, but Dozier made a motion to vote to return. Also wanted to make sure that the virtual comments for citizens continued. Dozier feels the virtual comments allows for more public engagement and it may be worth the cost to continue. Brian Welch and Rick Miner agreed, among others, and the motion was supported, keeping the virtual comments as a permanent component for future meetings. So something that they will keep doing moving forward, that was a was a invention during the pandemic. So another thing that they talked about was the street naming issue. Now listen, that was a 5-2 vote that the Obama Street thing fell by the wayside, but it wasn't a vote because of, I mean, the people voted against it for a lot of different reasons. Commissioner Brian Welch didn't support the renaming of East Pensacola Street after President Obama. He asserted that renaming the street does not help create jobs in the community or fix potholes. He also said that renaming of a street after a president can be viewed as a partisan, and will offend half of his constituents. So he was really weighing in on the political aspect of this. He said if you were voting to rename a street after President Trump, he'd vote against that too. And so, however, some other people who voted against it were more concerned with the actual name. They wanted it to be President Obama Way. They weren't real happy with the actual stretch of the street that was being named after the president. So I look for this to come back again. I think they want to get it right. And so they'll continue to search for the best roadways to suit the renaming and maybe make a change. Here it is. Commissioner Nick Maddox recommended President Barack Obama Lane. And so, I think Brian Welch's comments, I think he admitted that he voted for President Obama. So here you got a guy who's actually talking some common sense. And so we'll see if he can carry the day. But, Bobby, what do you got?
Just real quick, I think Obama Lane sounds horrible. That is such a bad name.
Well, Obama Street, they didn't like that either because that doesn't sound good. I thought, President Barack Obama Way.
The Obama Way, that would have been nice. Yeah. Obama Avenue.
Yeah, and this was just a recommendation. It's going to take him some time. It's taken him a couple of years to get this renaming street thing down anyway. So they will, they'll come back to it. The last thing from the county commission meeting that I wanted to talk about was a Canopy Roads designation. They put a process in place where communities or neighborhoods can vote to designate a Canopy Road. They had required 100% of the community or the neighborhood to be on board. I think they changed that to where it was only 90%. I'm not sure exactly what this means. I guess you get this Canopy Road designation. Obviously, we're big on Canopy Roads around here, and I'm big on it too. I mean, I ride down Centerville Road almost every day. And I like the Canopy Roads. It's something that's very unique. They can be dangerous if you're trying to speed on them. And that's more the issue with Meridian Road. So that was something they brought up. Now, so that you don't think I'm ignoring some of the bigger issues that were at the county commission meeting, some of the budget stuff they dealt with takes a little more time to diagnose, and we'll have you an update on that on Tuesday. Took us some time to get through the city commission budget stuff, which we got some stories up on that. But we'll get to that. Now I wanted to pivot to the joint meeting that they had on the homeless issue. This was a big deal during the pandemic when there were a lot of encampments, I believe, around town. At some point, it got up to 50 or 60 homeless encampments during the pandemic year. It was a big issue here on North Monroe Street. The city's was trying to take some action on how to deal with it. They wanted to have a meeting with the county. That got to be a little bit controversial because they wanted to wait till we had a plan. Well, now they finally did have the meeting, and it looks like they have a plan, and the plan involves a lot of money. To be specific, it is the city and the county approved $6.2 million now in federal funds for homeless services. Mayor Daley has claimed that this is a game changer. This money is coming from the American Rescue Plan Act, and the money will be split among the Big Bend Continuum of Care, which serves an 8-county region, and the CHSP, which is the Community Human Services Partnership. and it's intended to streamline the homeless services, add beds, and leverage local funding to make the region more competitive with seeking federal funding. Now, $6.2 million to get started here. But really, what problem are we addressing, and how big of a problem is it? You know, I think one of the things that anytime you see a homeless person on the corner of the street or in an encampment, it doesn't take a lot to really, you know, to embarrass people. This is happening in our community, or to have an impact on a local business, and not to mention the impact of that individual who is homeless and may be suffering from mental health issues or financial problems. But you know, Tallahassee's seen a 30% decrease in homelessness and a 56% decrease in homeless youth since 2015. So if you go and look into this, the exact numbers, which I have for you. So the total number of homeless people who have, and homeless is being defined as human habitation in places that are not meant for people to stay. So if you're staying in a shelter, you're not considered homeless in this count. But the count in 2015 was 860 people. That number rose to 1,000 in 2017. And now the 2021 count is 621. So the number's fallen. And, you know, again, if you the methodology may have changed in 2021. They're presenting these numbers as trends. So anyway, I think it's fair to say the number is between 800 and 1,000 and this is in the Big Bend area, which is an 8-county area. Population 600,000 people, and you've got about 800 people that are homeless. So we're going to put up $6.2 million to sort of deal with this. Now, we hear a lot about children being homeless. Total youth, this is people under the age of 18. You're looking at 67 people. So again, between 100 and 200 kids. I know in Leon County, we have 33,000 people under, well, no, we got about 45,000 people under 18, from what I understand. So interesting the attention this is getting. Like I said, it doesn't take a lot of homeless people to create a problem or a perception. But the question, and it'll be interesting to follow this, is this a $6.2 million problem? It's obviously a perception problem. Is it more about just trying to find a solution versus the money issue? So I don't know. We'll see. It does seem like everybody was on, I don't know if everybody was, but it looks like obviously there was a majority of people on board for moving forward with this. And this will be something that will be easy to track and to keep an eye on. But again, something that you want as a community, it's really a double-edged sword. You want to be able to deal with it, but you don't want to deal with it in a way where it promotes more homeless people. And so I know that the talk also has to revolve around people who are struggling to afford homes, or who maybe are bordering on being homeless because of the lack of affordable housing has become an issue or a talking point that you see, a lot. And you know, we see now with the increase of single family homes, you know, it's just almost impossible for people to get into starter homes now. This is what they're saying. So we'll have to keep an eye on this and see where the money goes, and I think it'll be an interesting issue to follow. So all right, when we get back, we're going to pivot to the FBI trial, the federal corruption trial. Shouldn't say FBI, the federal corruption trial, which, you know, I'm getting tweets regularly on what's going on inside the courtroom. I mean, the way the feds operate, you can't take any cameras in there, so we have to sort of do what we can to get the information instead of sitting there for a full day. But when we get back, we'll tell you what happened yesterday and maybe give you some updates on today if we can get them. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. You got me running.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold. You're on Real Talk 93.3. As most of you know, there is a federal trial going on here in Tallahassee related to local corruption. It's been a corruption that had that happened back in 2013, 2014, 2015. So the wheels of justice move slowly. There's no doubt about that. But Taos Reports and a number of other people were involved with reporting on a lot of stuff that was happening at the time, not knowing that, you know, not knowing that there was an FBI undercover investigation going on, and not knowing that exactly some of the things we were writing about was part of this scheme to defraud a lot of people of money. So anyway, as you know, elected official has pled guilty to bribery, and his associate. We saw a city manager resign, and we also have one other indictment, JT Burnett, who's a local businessman. And again, as I said before, the trial is about JT Burnett, but what's going to happen is, as we're seeing now, is there's going to be a lot of dirty laundry that's going to get is going to be made public. And yesterday was just the beginning, and let me tell you, it's dirty laundry. So anyway, what happened yesterday? So the part of the trial is about a decision by the city commission. A group wanted to put a hotel up downtown, and JT Burnett, who owned a hotel and was looking to buy another one, allegedly didn't want this hotel built. And so they conspired and schemed to get the city commission to not to do this. And this was through the help of Scott Maddox. Now, remember, these are all allegations that the feds are making. But what happened yesterday was Gary Yordan, who at the time was employed by Governance, a company that was secretly owned by Scott Maddox, and basically he was representing the group that was trying to put up the hotel. And he didn't register to lobby for that group. And when he was asked to register to lobby, and we reported on this, you can go to TalousReports.com and look at the story we wrote back then. He didn't register to lobby, and then when he was asked to register to lobby, he registered for a company that was not even active via the state business regulations, and he paid by cash. And so the point was, we had a sense that he was shielding his relationship with Governance, which would have been a major ethics violation. And so 8 years later, he basically is under oath and testifies that that is exactly what happened. There was Mr. Yordan participated in a scheme to hide his connection to Governance so that he can make money. He testified that the fees paid by the McKibben Hotel Group that went to, quote, the Zachary Group, which was what his sort of fake business name was, went immediately to Governance, which was secretly controlled by Scott Maddox. And so he admitted that under oath, and so he had participated in this scheme and admitted that Mr. Maddox was the one that was in control of Governance. And so now the point becomes this. He has said that there was no way Scott Maddox was ever going to vote on this issue anyway. But it appears that the charges by the feds is that JT Burnett worked with Scott Maddox so that there would be a vote that would be come out favorable to Mr. Burnett, in the sense that the McKibben Hotel wouldn't be built. Well, that's ultimately what happened, is it was a 2-2 vote not to change the permitting at that corner of the street, which is the southwest corner of Monroe and Tennessee Street. And so then McKibben Hotel was left without the ability to build a hotel that would have competed with Mr. Burnett's holdings, the Hotel Duval, and then the hotel he was going to buy, the DoubleTree. Actually, it was in negotiations to buy when this whole thing was going on. And so the that was just one day. And so now what we're going to see is we're going to see other local officials testifying, City Attorney Lou Shelley, who defended Maddox's right to vote on this, even though his relationship with Governance was well known. They had previously represented the McKibben Hotel Group. He also testified that Maddox felt like he did not have a conflict. So now what's going to happen is, as we move through this trial, this is going to happen on a daily basis. You're going to get elected officials that were trusted with public dollars, city attorney, city manager, city commissioners, Gil Ziffer and Nancy Miller. They're going to testify. And, you know, the brutal part here is these people are going to have to testify to things that they ignored. They turned their head the other way, or unethical behaviors that they participated in without bringing up. And in other words, they betrayed the public trust. Now, you can betray the public trust without conducting criminal activity. Obviously, what's happening now is they're trying to weed out the people that conducted criminal activity. But when people get up and say that, you know, they participated in this scheme and it's not criminal but very unethical, or they are testifying because they got a deal with the feds, I mean, it really paints the city in a bad brush, puts them in a bad light, because you go back and look, we're not talking about low-level people here. I mean, I think city manager Anita Favors is going to testify. City manager Rick Fernandez. You got two city commissioners. So, I mean, you got a city attorney. These are high-level people that were making six figures a year to protect the public trust. And now they're having to admit that they basically they didn't do that. And so the McKibben Hotel Group is one of the major charges, because I think it involved a $100,000 transfer to governance from one of the accounts controlled by JT Burnett. Now, this will get technical as you talk about the accounting, and the jury is going to have to look at this and figure out if, you know, what happened. And that's why they're considered allegations to this point. And, you know, in a weird way, from my perspective, this trial, again, as I said, is about the guilt or innocence of JT Burnett, but it's going to reveal where the public trust was betrayed. And you got a good look at it on Monday with Mr. Yordan, who has ran a lot of political campaigns. He's a columnist for the Tallahassee Democrat. And so when you get somebody like that under oath and just tell you they've been really misleading people to make money, I mean, for the last 10, 15 years, that's going to have an impact. And we'll see what it is. We'll see if there's other actions taken by local elected officials. I mean, you know, we're starting, you know, does this mean that people that are caught up in this are not going to be eligible to be vendors with the city and the county? Are we going to take some steps to say, look, you know, what you did was wrong? Are we going to seek apologies from people that served in these roles? I mean, you know, not to stand up to this because you didn't have the courage is one thing, but to recognize it years later and to say, look, I'm sorry, I think would go a long way. And that's going to be interesting to see if that's a fallout from this trial also. So anyway, we'll bring you updates on this periodically. You know, we don't have anybody sitting in the courtroom. The feds, the way they do this covering a trial is really archaic. You're not allowed to take any phones, any camera material in. And so you just really have to wait for a break to get out of there and report. And it's not easy to do. So we do have, there's a lot of, the local TV stations are, I think, have a reporter staked out there. Jeff Berlew is there. And so we'll get the updates. But what I'll try to do is tie this, as I did with this Gary Yordan testimony, to stuff that's previously been reported. And again, it's really interesting from my perspective to go back and read these stories that we wrote in 2013, 2014, and to see exactly how right we were to raise these questions. Not a lot of people got on the bandwagon and followed up with these reports. Anyway, all right, when we get back, we'll pivot from the FBI trial and we'll talk about the local school board and what's going on out at Childs High School. It's got a little bit broader implications than just Childs High School. So stay tuned. We'll talk about it. You're listening to Above the Fold. We'll be right back after this break.
If it's local, and it matters. It's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Spartan Stoneworks. One of the most common and cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen, but quality materials like granite, quartz, and marble countertops get expensive. Well, not when you shop with Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be lower than anywhere else because they don't mark up the cost of the stone materials. The way they see it, since they didn't carve it out of a mountain themselves, they're not going to charge any made-up fees. Great pricing, amazing craftsmanship, and quick turnaround from an honest local company. Give them a call at 765-2037. That's 765-2037. We appreciate their sponsorship. All right. So we've covered Leon County Commission meeting. We've covered the federal trial. Now we're going to pivot to the Leon County School Board and an issue out at Childs High School. And I want to say this at the very beginning. This has more implications than this at Childs High School, and you'll understand that why when I get through it. So we got a tip that there was an issue at Childs High School instead of how they were using some dedicated funds. And sure enough, it turns out to be there was an investigation going on. On the day of the school board meeting on Tuesday, Superintendent Hannah added this issue to the agenda at the last minute. Very nondescript, not a lot of information except the fact that the principal at Childs High School, Joe Burgess, was going to be suspended for 2 weeks. However, he wasn't going to go quietly, and so this presented an issue, and he was asking support to send this suspension or this investigation to a formal hearing with the Department of Administrative Hearings. And so the school board voted to do this. However, we started doing a little more digging. We got a comment, broke a story from Mr. Burgess's attorney, said he felt personally targeted by this investigation. We published that story. The investigation revolves around the use of funds that are generated by advanced placement test. And there's a statewide program that schools get a certain amount of money depending on how many students pass or get above a score of a 3 on advanced placement test. The school district got $2 million from the state in 2021 based on this. About close to $500,000 went to Childs High School. And so turns out that the investigation was looking at how these funds were spent. And 80% of the funds need to be spent on things related to teaching or instruction, which leaves another $100,000 to be spent any way the principal wants. Now, with some parameters, I assume, but you know what we've learned in covering the school board is that principals have a lot of autonomy. And actually, I've been told by some that they are like mayors of cities. They can just decide what's going to happen at their school. Well, these monies are given out, and it turns out that this 20-page investigation found that there are a lot of loopholes in the policies that regulate them. For example, there's no formal process in reporting, you know, what the money's spent on. And an example would be this, is that, so you get this $500,000, the principal of the school says, we're gonna pay so many teachers these 3 hours a week to do tutoring. But, you know, there's not a formal requirement that to pay that, you've got to submit a time card and you got to sign off on it. And so the time cards were just estimated. And so, but the investigation said that, you know, we couldn't find that Joe Burgess had violated any policy or laws related to that. So you ask, well, why was he suspended? That's the interesting part of the investigation. It had to do with the salary of the Childs football coach. Evidently, when this new football coach was hired at Childs, he had demanded more money than could be paid in traditional ways. So the principal said, all right, well, look, I've got 20% of these AP funds that I can spend in other ways. And so they were looking at paying the coach an extra $10,000. The problem is, in the investigation, they could not document any tasks that were assigned to the football coach from the principal. And there was no documentation of the work he did for the $10,000. So they asked him to submit what he did. And so if you look at some of the things that he did, you know, they start to overlap with duties he should have had as the football coach. So you're starting to get into this area of, well, the football coach is being paid to do something he's already being paid to do. And so it just looks like a shell game of trying to get someone more money because you couldn't get it within the football budget. The problem here is that Mr. Burgess might have been sloppy with how this was done, but again, there doesn't seem to be any laws or policies that were broken. Now, there was a recommendation for a two-week suspension, unpaid, because of, I guess, the poor paperwork that was missing, or the paperwork that was missing. Well, I think what Mr. Burgess is saying, well, wait a minute. I didn't violate any policies. You don't have any policies that say I've got to do this paperwork. You trust me to make sure the money's being spent properly. And so he's going to challenge this. And now the first thing he's going to say is, look, why don't you do an investigation of the other high schools and the disposition of their advanced placement funds and let me know how that goes. Am I being singled out here because, yeah, you got a tip and we might be lacking in the paperwork area, but I stand by my decisions on how I spent the money. I think that they follow they follow the law. And yeah, maybe I didn't keep the paperwork properly, but other people are doing the same thing the way I'm doing it. So how this turns out is, I think, is now with the hearing is going to be conducted by DOA. Now, you're talking about process moving slow. You know, Bobby will be employed and probably have two kids before this thing even goes to hearing. And so, I mean, the issue...
Steve, that's a lot of pressure you just threw out on me right there.
Hey, man, you got about 5 years, I promise. No, but so the DOA process is slow, if anything. And so now, but I think if you go back and look at this, this is not what the superintendent of the school board wanted to happen. They wanted to be able to get this two-week suspension done. They wanted Burgess to go along with it, and this would be on his record, and it'd be over. But now, this investigative report has been leaked. Well, it's not leaked. It's been provided now by the school board, and I applaud them for that. But this raises, I think, not only questions about what's going on at Childs High School with these AP funds. We're talking about $2 million a year. I am now eager to find out exactly how other schools are spending these AP funds. And so we have already had a records request in with the school board on the internal football accounts and the booster accounts for Childs and Lincoln High School. And so we'll get those and we'll dig through this. But I think that if you're a school board member and you're looking at this, you would say, look, we need to put in some policies to make sure these AP funds are accounted for in a proper manner and that they're being spent in a way that we want them to spend them. And I think the questions would be asked, do we want to give principals the latitude to be able to spend $10,000 with a football coach? Now, look, again, the law says 20% of the funds can be spent outside of instructional jobs. So it looks to me like that the $10,000 expenditure on a football coach might be appropriate. The question would be, is did he actually do any work for it? Now, that's where you get into the problem. And so anyway, I think this is going to be a teaching moment, something that might be able to result in some new policies and some better accountability for money that's going into our school system, which I think, as we're seeing, the principals can do what they want. Maybe we need a little tighter control over this. Let them spend it the way they want, but have requirements that they submit reports on a monthly basis, and you've got somebody at the school board checking off on this and making sure that it's moving in the right way. So anyway, all right. Well, we got in our remaining 2 minutes here. Wanted to just sort of recap what we talked about today. We, you know, addressed the Leon County Commission meeting. We've got the Taos Reports has put up the briefs from that meeting. It's I think it's about 12 to 15 items, 800 words, probably about a 4 minute read to get you caught up on the Leon County Commission meeting. The homeless issue, we'll have a story up on that. We're diagnosing. You know, we wanted to dig a little deeper on looking instead of just the $6.2 million. Wanted to look at exactly how many people is this covering? What's the magnitude of our problem? Just to say we have a homeless problem and write an article about there being $16.2 million spent, we want to let you know, look, you know, we've got 700 people or so. And then we talked about the FBI trial in the last segment. We'll continue to provide updates on that. As I said, This is about a lot more than JT Burnett. It's about some very high level officials that were trusted by the public to do a job where their bosses were the public, and it looks like a lot of people were turning their head the other way while some laws were being violated. So we'll continue to cover that. So anyway, thanks for tuning in. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back on Tuesday at 11 a.m. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold. Waiting for